The past year has brought a lot of policy changes at the provincial level. From healthcare to education and, of course, housing and social services, the decisions at the National Assembly are having big impacts on the community here in Montreal. Here at CKUT, we're located in the riding of Westmount Saint-Louis, which spans both McGill and Concordia universities, as well as a large part of Montreal's Anglophone community. CKUT sat down with our member of National Assembly, the Liberals' Jennifer Macaron, to get her perspective on the direction that the governing Coalition Avenir Québec is headed. We also hear more about her position on students, queer and trans rights, and the protest movement for Palestine. Take a listen.
So first, I will just ask you to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Macaron. I'm the MNA for Westmount Saint-Louis. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak with you. And we're just going to start off by speaking about the last year at the National Assembly in review. You know, a lot has happened. I'm wondering if you could tell me about just one or two of the big milestones from the past year, either things that you think are important for people to know about or things that you've heard from the folks in your riding that really matter to them. What's the sort of year in review for you?
It's a big question with lots of sub-questions. So I would say for Quebec, probably the most important thing that's happened to all Quebecers is the gigantic, never seen before deficit of $15 billion. We have never seen anything like that in the history of the province of Quebec. This current government has clearly lost control of spend. We are making decisions, or they are making decisions, that are not to the benefit of all Quebecers, and it's going to damage us. It's going to take us likely a quarter of a century to come back to rebalance that budget, to the point where they've emptied the Fonds de Génération. You know, we sent $600 checks to everybody in the province. That's close to $4 billion, $1 billion at a contract that did not go to tender for the roof of the Olympic Stadium. You know, $7 million for the LA Kings to come and see us in Quebec. There's been a lot of questionable decisions. So I would say economically, especially in a riding like Westmount Saint-Louis, which covers all of the downtown core of Montreal, we are the economic hub of the province. It's of significant concern. So that would, I'd say it's huge. I'd say the other thing that happened over the course of the year that's likely to orient a lot of things for our riding, but also the province, is the major changes in terms of direction that the government has gone in terms of identity and nationalism, as well as immigration. Huge impact for us here. They're closing all the doors. It's going to have a huge impact on our universities, from the school fees that they've changed to the new rules that are in place for CSQ, for students that are here coming and hoping with to stay in the province. It's going to harm us, again, economically. It harms our international reputation. It's going to be extremely challenging for our universities to rebound. In this riding, we have five universities. So we have Concordia, McGill, UQAM, we have ETS, and we have one of the campuses for HEC.
Maybe I'll just pick up on the thread of students and, you know, some of the changes we've seen at that level. You know, McGill, this is our campus radio station, CKUT. And, you know, last fall, we saw tuition go up for out-of-province students at McGill and Concordia, most specifically. The government also introduced a freeze on applications to programs that would offer international students a path to permanent residency. As you said, you're the MNA for the riding that covers both of these universities as well as others. What is being done at the provincial level to speak up for students who are being affected by these changes?
Well, you can certainly count on the Liberal Party of Quebec. We're actually the only group has spoken up in defense of our universities, in defense of our international students, in defense of students coming from out of province as well. Maybe because we're the last Federalist party in the House, I'm not sure, but the reality is that we understand that beyond nationalism and identity and the division of Anglophone, Francophone, which the government is really trying to, you know, create a huge divide, there's such a need and such an economic profile requirement for us here. It's nonsense. So we have deposited mandate initiatives. We've asked questions in the House. You heard Marois Risky, so at the time, who was our higher education critic, come out against Pascal Derry, because there's absolutely no documentation, no statistics, no reports that say that this is going to be at all beneficial and that we're going to be able to redistribute the wealth amongst all of our Francophone universities. So we've spoken up against it. We've tried to educate the community. Michelle Sataqui, who's our new critic for higher education, she sits in all of the bills. The government recently adopted Bill 74, which is the immigration bill, which is going to prohibit our international students with a CSQ to emigrate here. So the PEC program is on hold. Anytime there's an issue, like I was mentioning the budget earlier, right? So historic deficit like we've never seen. Anytime that there's going to be an issue or an attack on the government, François Legault or any one of the other CAC members, they immediately revert to identity issues. They immediately revert to nationalism and they try to switch the narrative. It's a diversion technique. It works. In a lot of cases, you know, we create this fear, oh my gosh, French is on a decline and we need to do something about it. We shouldn't have bonjour, hi. People aren't speaking enough French when we come into the downtown core and, you know, you're walking into a business, for example. It's really a division tactic. So they're catering to a base, looking to create awareness that is completely, completely distinct from the actual issues that they need to target.
And, you know, what are some of those issues, I guess, in your point of view? Like you said that there's a major deficit, right? A historic deficit at the provincial level. But in the meantime, you know, at CKUT, we talk to people all the time who want more government spending in health and social services, things like that. You know, is that attempt to provide a robust social safety net while managing the deficit? Like, is that trying to square the circle? What is your vision for a path forward there?
So we need a strong economy. Right. I don't want to be too political or too partisan, but it's a real liberal value. Right. It's the idea of having a strong economy, which will contribute to the social programs that we need to help people in situations of vulnerability or people that find themselves in difficult times so that we can get back and contribute to that strong economy. It's not the same vision of the CAC when you're, you know, doling out all the money to people who don't need the money. My kids didn't need a $600 check. You know, there's that kind of spending, which is very populist. Our position is that bills like Bill 96, for example, significant portions of that bill need to be rescinded because you're making it difficult for businesses to install themselves here, to stay in business here. You're making people afraid to come and work here, thrive here. We need people to stay. Other things that are going to significantly impact, and we're going to see it short-term, long-term, medium-term, is all the changes in terms of immigration. So our goal is also to attract that talent, keep that talent here. Do we need to talk about there's, you know, a lot of temporary workers? Yes, I think we should have that conversation. It's important, it's sane, it's logical, it's responsible. But I don't think that we can neglect the fact that we need to attract talent. We need more doctors. We need more nurses. We need more daycare educators. We need more teachers. We need more specialists. And if we're not going to allow these people who see a future in Canada and in Quebec to stay, we're going to find ourselves in extremely difficult times, and it's just going to continue to get worse. Quebecers, ultimately, we're the most taxed province in Canada. 50% of your money goes to the government, and yet we're not seeing the value of that in our public service. So it's not more taxes that we need, but it's a better organization of our services and our spend so that we can see the value in what we're investing.
At the beginning of last year, we saw the start of the introduction of Santé Québec, this large restructuring of the province's healthcare system under a single provincial employer. You know, we're now a year out from that. And I think for a lot of people, it's just really complex and it's hard to know what exactly is happening within the system and how it's going to affect them down the line and their access to healthcare. I'm wondering if you can give people who might be, you know, concerned or just curious about that, an update on what's been happening in the past year and what they should expect in the year to come.
It's a really good question. I don't have the answers to all of that. We had a town hall in our riding. We had doctors, we had lawyers, we had nurses, we had all kinds of specialists in the room. We had citizens in the room, a lot of them seniors, people that are deeply concerned, people that don't have doctors, right? Santé Québec, what does that mean for me? I need a doctor. I need to have access to medical services. I need support. And, you know, I'm not getting it from my CLSC. I'm not getting it from the hospital when I show up there. I don't know what to do when it's an emergency case. We went through COVID, all of that stuff. Santé Québec was live as of December 1st, 2024. So it's new. The transition, I think, will be transparent for most Quebecers, because basically what they've done is they took the Ministry of Health and all of those employees, they just transported them to Santé-Québec. Santé-Québec is now, I don't know how to say it in English, but they're like Hydro-Québec, right? So they are a complete separate entity, a crown corporation. That's what they are. So they're a crown corporation, which means that the government's no longer responsible for their decisions. It's going to make it harder for us at the National Assembly to question the government, regardless of who the government is, because now that they've gone down this road, 2026, doesn't matter who's in power, you're not undoing that decision because it's billions of dollars in transition efforts. And they've got their top guns. So you have Madame Biron, who's the new PDG, who hopefully will be able to reorganize services because that's their vision. Their vision is that we need to reorganize, we need to change how we're offering the service in order to synthesize and be more effective. They've based a lot of this on what they did in Alberta. Alberta had Alberta Health. They're walking out of Alberta Health. They're undoing everything that they've done because they've said, this isn't working. It's made everything worse. And so they're coming back to the program that we originally had. Do I hope it works? Yes. I do not wish ill of the government or any of the decisions that they're making, because you and I and everybody who's listening are going to inherit all of that. I want them to be successful. If it means that my mom will get a doctor, that my kids who have special needs will have access to the people that they need for their care, yes, please. And can I have it in all the languages that I want? Because that's also an essential service and it's my right. But beyond that, I can't predict what will happen. I don't know how they're going to organize it. Most people are the specialists, the pundits. Most people are saying that it's not going to have the change that we want, right? So, but it's given an enormous amount of power to the institution itself, and it's going to also standardize a lot of things. So like we have our CIUS Centre West, that's downtown core, and there's CIUS Centre Sud. They're changing all of that. It's going to be Santé-Québec this, Santé-Québec that, kind of like what they did in education. There's no more individual school boards, there's school service centers, they're standardizing everything, which is not good news for a riding where we are, when we know that we are very diverse, we're extremely unique. So that type of standardization is not good for the population that we service here. So there's a lot of concerns. I am consistently speaking to the PDGs of our institutions here to find out what's happening, what the next step is. And we're fortunate because the MUHC is one of the best run institutions where we have the least amount of forced overtime. Our staff is dedicated. Hopefully we won't see a big negative impact, but it's something to watch out for.
Yeah. And, you know, you were speaking a little bit about diversity, minority populations. One thing that I know is a concern for our listeners is queer and trans rights in the province. I'm wondering, you know, we heard a bit, mostly in 2023, but also a little bit in 2024, about the new Wisemen Committee on Gender Identity that's happening.
Is that how we say it in English?
Yeah, the Comité des Sages.
Wise men, okay.
Yeah, which is, it's a translation. It's not the kind of term that would be used, I think, across the country, okay, but it's how we've sort of dealt with this new three-person committee that's been consulting with various groups over the past year to, you know, come up with a path forward for how the provincial government tackles these issues. It's had a lot of criticism and a lot of concern from queer and trans groups over the composition of the committee. For somebody who is the liberal critic on these issues, what are you sort of watching for? Should we still be concerned? And, you know, can you tell us anything about the timeline of when the government might take action on that?
I can't call it the Wise Men Committee because they're not wise and they're not all men. So I am deeply concerned about this committee that's been enacted, regretfully due to an unfortunate interview that the Parti Québécois gave. And all of a sudden, the government, we mentioned that they have to pivot and divert. They pivoted, they diverted, they made this Comité des Sages. Their salaries, by the way, combined is roughly $1 million. Money that we could have redirected to all of our community groups that support the 2SLGBTQI+ community, who are desperately in need of funding, of accompaniment from the government. I am opposed to this group. I have said it publicly. I have needled the government in budgetary credits to ask, why are we doing this? What is the use of this? Their report is going to come out after the next elections. So we don't know exactly where it's going to orient anybody. It's a distraction technique. I was one of the individuals that they interviewed. I appreciate the time that they gave me, but at the end of the day, I do not see the utility in what they're trying to accomplish because people don't want to have gender-specific bathrooms in our schools. It should be a local decision that should be made by your local governing board, by your teachers, by your administrators, by your staff, by your students. They're the ones that should dictate what they need. And I am also extremely concerned because we're seeing everything that's happening across the world, whether it's the United States or Europe and all this right-wing movement, and how we've seen how our rights, I'm a member of the community, how our rights are taking a big step back. I'm concerned. Will I be able to still get married? You know, what is the impact? All of these things, people are worried, and it feels like, and I don't have statistics for it, I can only tell you what I've seen. It feels like we've given the population the right to behave badly. You know, it's gone beyond, I can say what I want to do on a screen because I can't see you, I'm not looking at you, to I'm looking at you and I'm seeing you. And now I'm saying these things because, you know, we've got a government that's dividing us. We're saying we need this comité de sage. We're putting our money in the wrong places. Look how long it took for, you know, our individuals who are non-binary to have an X on their RAMQ card. I sat in on the reform of family law. I was there for the unanimous vote. It is ridiculous that these people had to wait a year and a half for something that was already in the civil code to have their rights respected. And it seems like a little thing because we're talking about a tiny, tiny portion of the population, but your rights are your rights, regardless of who you are, regardless of your gender identity, your sexuality, it doesn't matter. I am deeply offended by the positions that the government has taken. We no longer even have a minister responsible for the fight against homophobia and transphobia. We've got the minister responsible for the Condition Féminine. It's not even a ministry. It's, you know, it's a bureau, and we have another bureau under it, so there's no money that's invested there. I think it's also a dossier that we need to be concerned about. We don't talk a lot about those kinds of issues because they're not popular. You know, so a government's in power and they're not going to want to talk about that. I specifically asked my caucus when I first became an MNA in 2018, I want to have LGBT in my title. Nobody's ever done that here. And I think I represent a portion of the population. I think we need to be visible. We need to show that our community is everywhere. And there's not a, you know, everybody says, but you don't look like a lesbian. What do lesbians look like? Please tell me. So, you know, it's that visibility and important role that we play because it should be normalized. You shouldn't be asking me about my sexuality. It shouldn't be a question. But in order to get there, we need to continue to fight for our rights. So I'm going to continue to do things like that that seem small, but for me, they feel very big.
Yeah, you talked about the sort of popular or populist leanings of the current government, and definitely the rise of populism, whatever form it takes, is something that we're seeing worldwide. The Liberal Party is kind of, by its nature, an anti-populist party, right? That liberalism is about individual rights, as you've said. And right now, I mean, we're seeing this a little bit federally, but we're seeing it around the world, right? That kind of a stance is just, well, it's just not popular. It's becoming more and more difficult to approach politics that way. I'm wondering if you can sort of speak to why you think that is and what kind of solutions you can still offer people, right? Like, is this an attractive vision when so many people feel like they're hard done by and a sort of individual rights approach is just not what they want to see right now?
You're right. There's a huge push on the right, whether it's happening federally in Canada, like we've seen now with the Conservative Party, not so much the party, but, you know, their party leader, with somebody like Pierre Poilievre, who's got, it's not very clear what their stance is on abortion. It's not very clear what their stance is in terms of LGBT rights or minority rights, for example. I'm a very hopeful person. Maybe it's just my personality, but I think that if our communities come together, and not just minority, diverse communities, all communities, you know, how the majority treats the minority says a lot about who we are as a society. I think if we can all come to the table and demystify and offer information, explain we don't have that exchange anymore. We're so quick to, you know, we're going to judge people. It's easier to do that than to sit down and have a conversation with you, look you in the eyes for 5 minutes and say, this is where I'm coming from. I'm not looking to hurt you. I am a partner. I want to work with you. So my hope is that more and more of our youth are going to mobilize. We have a terrible voter turnout for our youth. So the people that are listening, please go vote. Regardless of who you vote for, it's extremely important that you exercise your right. That's a way for you to gain power. It's a way for you to exercise and have your voice heard. There's no such thing as a wasted vote. $1.83 of each of your votes goes to your party of choice, and that supports them and the visions that are most important to you. But ideally, you know what? There's going to be fundamental changes in leadership, whether it's provincially or federally in the United States, which has a significant impact on us. Look how much we're talking about Donald Trump. I don't want to talk about Donald Trump. I do not wish to give him airtime. I think it's ridiculous all the time that we're giving to this gentleman. We're making him a superpower, and we should not. I think that we need people to exercise their right to vote and make changes, whether it's, you know, I don't like the government in power, or this group most represents my values, because there's no such thing as one political party that absolutely represents you. It's big tent politics. And you know what? I love my children, but there are days where they make me really mad and I'm really angry with them, but I still love them and I'm not giving them up. They're still my kids. That's big tent politics. And I'd rather be inside the tent than out in the parking lot, not having my voice heard. Get involved. Make your voice heard. Put your face on a sign. There's not enough people running for politics anymore. Be the voice that you want other people to do for you, but also, you know, demonstrate, you know, act the role that you'd like other people to have, emulate it. And I think other people will follow. Just like we're allowing people to emulate this negative behavior and everybody gets on board. We're human. So I'm not an expert in sociology. I'm sure that there's something to do with that. But if that's the case, then we should be able to counterbalance.
You know, you mentioned youth participation and popular politics. And, you know, we have seen a lot of young people get involved, but specifically, I would say, in the movement for Palestine, we've seen a lot of protests at schools like Concordia and McGill. And I know, as a critic on public safety, you've spoken out about the need for those to be, you know, safe and well managed. From the opposite side, I've also spoken to people who are in that movement who feel it's over-policed. I'm wondering, you know, what you would say to people who have the view that more policing is not necessarily going to solve some of people's fears around safety when it comes to these protests.
You're 100% on the money. I think we need to use our public security funds and les forces de l'ordre in a responsible manner. And what I've seen from the protests, it's not necessarily the people that have their vision and their values. There's these other people that seem to get involved and it, you know, they give it a negative connotation. I don't know how to organize all of that, but you're right. There needs to be a better balance. Is it based on the fact that people are fearful now because there have been acts of violence, because it's obviously reached a level where in some points it's become out of control? And so now everybody's saying, well, I'm scared to go to school. Again, it's about having that conversation. It's about respecting people's right to speak up, to have their opinions heard. I don't think we can ever speak enough about the value of that, because that's a democratic society. And so we need to prioritize that, but find a way to do that peacefully so that there can be demonstrations, because that's the best way to get your voice heard without it necessarily. And I know it's meant to impact, right? The goal is to displace people. The goal is to create that kind of awareness. But when it starts hindering on violence and attacks and things like that, that's when, you know, you lose me as a supporter. I want people to be able to speak their minds, but then there's that sweet spot. You know, I think it's a partnership in terms of making sure that your voice is heard so that you don't need to use the SPVM or the SQ or whatever to get involved, to coordinate. If things are done well, you shouldn't need that. It should be enough to say, you know what, our intention is to have a demonstration. Here's what our route's going to be. And, you know, our goal, of course, is to create awareness. It's going to disrupt. That's the goal. But there's not going to be any violence. There's not going to be any vandalism. You're not going to see any of that, because that's where you lose a lot of people's support. Like what happened, you know, down near the Congrès, Palais de Congrès. It's those kinds of things are unacceptable. So I think it creates this I don't know, distinct version where we don't know how to adapt anymore. And the police are probably going, do I go? Do I not go? What do I do? Am I allowed to enforce? Do I not enforce? You know, and they've got people pulling from all sides. So you've got the university calling and saying you have to come. And then the police say, no, no, you've got your security inside. You know, it's become at a level where if everybody could come to the table and have a discussion, I'm sure that we could find a way through.
Just to finish up, we've covered a lot of topics for the year to come, both at the National Assembly level, and then obviously it's going to be a big year in terms of federal politics too, yeah. which are going to have trickle-down effects to the provincial level, to people in the riding here. You know, what are some things that you're watching that you think, you think you'd like to mention for our listeners so maybe they can watch too or they can get involved? Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, it's not just the federal Liberals that are going to be having a leadership race. The provincial Liberals are also going to be having a leadership race. And just news that's fresh, while we're having our conversation today, there's going to be four candidates. Whether you're Liberal or not, I would say pay attention, because there's going to be a lot of debates. There's going to be a lot of discussion. And so, again, take an active interest in the future of Quebec, because that's taking an active interest in your future, regardless of who you are, where you come from, whether you're a voter or not a voter. I think it's going to be important to take notice. Federally, the leadership race is going to have a significant impact on us, because if we look at what the trend is, I think that safe to say we're likely to have a conservative government in power, and it's going to be a majority government. So there's 4 years ahead of us. That will be a 180-degree change from how things have been managed now, where you can criticize Justin Trudeau and the government all you want. We've received significant amount of funding for our housing projects. We've received a significant amount of money for daycare. We've received a lot of transfer payments, which have allowed us to do things. I mean, our public services are not at the level that we should, given the taxes that we pay, but they have done a lot of transfers, whereas you've got a potentially new premier who has said that our mayor is an idiot. I don't know. I'm a little worried. And will that have an impact on the relationships with the provinces? Yes. So you want to make sure that the next leader of Quebec is somebody that's going to be able to harmonize and work with Mr. Poilievre, the conservative government, and establish those relationships. You can't do that if Quebec is sitting on an island. You're going to have to be part of the Federation and find a way through. So you need to find the right person who's going to be able to do that.
You just heard my interview with Jennifer Macaron, MNA for Westmount-Saint-Louis. For CKUT, I'm Jules Bugel with the Local Journalism Initiative.